Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is crazy.
This is The Extra Hot Crate Podcast, episode 345 for the week of March 8th, 2021. I am Zoom cootie call David T. Cole, and I'm here with unsanctioned cat Sarah D. Bunting.
Just take a Benadryl, you baby.
Shared phone line monopolizer Tara Ariano.
Just a second!
And Beeper owner Kim Reed.
I am not a drug dealer.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us is our dear friend Kim Reed. Hello, Kim!
Hello!
Kim!
Yay!
Kim is here to talk about the real world homecoming, colon, New York, which suggests they're going to try and do this with other cities in the future, TBD. But to let you know what this is, we all know what the real world is. MTV picked seven strangers to live together for a while and filmed them. As the opening credits narration says, the idea is to find out what happens when people stop being polite, start getting real. The very first season ever, before reality TV was even really a genre, was in New York. They filmed in the early winter of 1992 and started airing episodes that May. And then this January, as in 2 months ago, the original cast reconvened in the very same loft in Soho where they had all originally met and lived together for a special reunion season. They only shot for 6 days. I believe they got 10 episodes out of it. Those are going to be dropping once a week on Paramount Plus, formerly CBS All Access. So only the premiere has dropped so far. We haven't gotten to see any more episodes than that. This will be a spoiler-free conversation officially. Let us go around the circle, do the Chen check-in. Kim, should our listeners watch this show?
I think if you watched any of the first, I'm going to say, 10 seasons mm-hmm. of The Real World, then this would probably be interesting to you. If mm-hmm. you've never watched The Real World or only watched more recent seasons,
yeah.
I don't, unless you're a TV historian type, I right. don't know how interesting this would be to you.
Okay. Sarah.
Yeah, I am a stronger yes than Kim, because I think that, you know, the fluffing amongst the cast about how seminal, as it were, the show was can be a little much, but it really was.
Yeah.
And I think that that's instructive, and also it's extremely well built. Like, I sort of went into this thinking, all right, let's just see, and, you know, arms folded. And then by 10 minutes in, I was like, fine, I will watch the season. So yeah, I'd watch it. I mean, I think it operates on two different levels, and they're both worth making time for.
Okay, Dave.
I think I'm proof of Kim's thesis, which is if you don't watch Real World, this is sort of like a ghost of a show when you watch it because you don't have the background, which makes absolute sense. And finally, I will just add,
let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
The Real World.
Yeah. Yeah, Kim nailed it. I think if you are a fan of the earlier seasons of the show, this is for you. And like Sarah, I watched the premiere, and I was only going to watch the premiere of the original season. And then, whoops, I watched the entire first season over 2 days, which you can also do. The first season's on Paramount Plus. A bunch of old seasons are. I think of the 33, there are 20. But we're not here to talk about them. We're here to talk about the reunion season. So let us get into it. I've read a few reviews of the premiere. Our friend Andy Dainart's, Jen Chaney's at Vulture, and James Wanawoszek's at the New York Times, all of which we'll link to. They were redolent with Gen X nostalgia, just an ache to go back to the time when we first met this original cast. Kim, was that what you felt, or one of the things that you felt when you watched it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I, like you, Tara, I went back and watched the first half or so of the original season. And I was trying to think about, did I watch this when it originally aired? Mm-hmm. And I don't think I did, because
I didn't either.
I was in college and we didn't have cable.
Right.
And although I guess if it aired in May, I would have been at home. But I don't think I did. I certainly watched it. As you guys, we've talked about on the podcast many times, you know, they used to air whole seasons of The Real World on the weekends on MTV, mm-hmm. just over and over and over again. So I definitely have seen it before. But I don't think I started watching regularly until maybe season three, I'm going to guess, which was San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I watched faithfully and recapped the show for Television Without Pity for many seasons. Mm-hmm. But it did definitely take me back to a time and place. The reunion show even more than the original show that you can watch, because the reunion show has the music, and the music is really what drew me back. The original, they've had to substitute, generic versions of all of the songs. And mm-hmm. so these scenes that I remember, like when they go to the roller rink and, you know, they play Finally and all of that is substituted music, but the reunion has the original 90s music. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, more than anything, really took me back. I was interested, especially Sarah, because you live in New York and have been in New York. If seeing New York, you know, in some of the flashback scenes, if that had any resonance for you.
Like it did and it didn't. I mean, that's sort of been like the closest city always in my life. It really was a very different New York. Like, I think that you don't actually need a ton of context if you've never watched this franchise before, because they pull in enough of the old stuff. And mm-hmm. I think they give you a good amount of context without going crazy with the flashback clips.
Yep.
But I did like the way that was edited together with some of the side-by-side footage. And then, I mean, that was right at the point when they were filming and where they were filming. It was sort of right at the point when New York was becoming more what it is now, mm-hmm. which was as a result of, you know, racist policing, frankly.
Yeah.
Broken windows policing. But that it was like not quite as much of a scrapey adventure after sort of the early to mid 90s. So that was interesting to see. Like, I love the old cabs the same way I love seeing the old cop cars in the Law and Order credits. It wasn't so much that resonance. It was just like this at this particular point in human history, like the longing to connect with things from the before time, just generally, that was definitely resonating for me, because this is something that we would have watched like in a big puppy pile in the dorm TV room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I sort of came in at Los Angeles and then caught up on some summer weekend on New York. But that really spoke to me, like their joy in seeing each other and how important they were making staying connected to each other. That resonated for me for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I also reviewed it for Variety. I felt that too. I didn't write about that particular aspect of nostalgia because I had already written about it when I wrote my essay about collecting the Sassy archives, because it was like the same thing and even the same time period. Right. Like, this premiered right in the middle of the Sassy run. And now, you know, I have gone back there with the podcast that we started, which I talked about, Listen to Sassy, now on all your podcast platforms. But anecdotally, it does seem, as Sarah said, like, it seems like people have sought nostalgic comfort objects or experiences during the pandemic in various ways. Like, our friend Danny McEachern tweeted at one point about revisiting his old Hardy Boys books. And I think this is going to be a common reaction to the reunion about, like, just different things that people seek out, that this sparks in them.
Yeah.
So last week we had Brandon on. In the course of our discussion about The Mole, he described the first season of The Real World as unwatchable. And we should say, and I did at the time, he's a lot younger than we all are, so he has no nostalgic attachment to it. But it is true that the reunion's a lot more polished as a product, for sure. Probably mm-hmm. inevitable. But does it make Homecoming feel like a natural evolution from the first season or like a completely different show? Kim, you go first.
Well, I think rewatching the episodes I did rewatch from season one, you know, it is a different animal because they were inventing the genre pretty much as they went. And I think they had a different, I think Buna Murray had a different idea of what the show was going to be. Mm-hmm. I think it's telling that the, all of the people that they cast were artists in one form or another.
Yeah.
You know, some with maybe quotation marks, Eric Neese, but the rest of them, you know, were either visual artists or performing artists. And if you think about the cast of even season two, but definitely going forward, that was certainly not the case much longer. And it was a lot of just them hanging out. You know, they didn't, except for the trip to Jamaica, they didn't really put together situations for them to interact. They didn't try to make them have a job together. They didn't, you know, all those things came later. And I like that. That's what I always liked about The Real World, were the parts where the roommates were just hanging out and things organically happened, conversations organically happened. The reunion is definitely, like you said, a lot more polished, but it's hard to say because we've only seen the one episode. Yeah. And I think when you first get together with people that you haven't seen in a while, you have a lot to talk about at first.
Yeah.
You know, it's all the, what have you been up to? Let's see pictures of your kids and your wife and your husband and your dogs and everything. Mm-hmm. And then after that sort of fades, then what? And that's what I think will be really interesting about the reunion is these are all people who, I mean, I'm the same age as Julie, I discovered. Mm-hmm. And Eric's like a year older than me. So it's interesting to me to see what they will do when they're not getting prompted. They've all grown up with reality TV, too, just like I have. You know, all of my adulthood has been watching different types of reality TV. Mm-hmm. So they know what the producers want.
Yeah.
And how much will they play to the cameras? I mean, that was another thing I liked about the original season as opposed to later seasons. You didn't get the feeling after the first episode or so that they were playing to the cameras.
Yeah.
That seemed like that's just who they really were. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see in the reunion if that holds true or if certain people will be more performative than others or, you know, trying to have an agenda or anything like that. It'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure, but it's definitely more polished for sure.
Yeah. Sarah, what do you think?
I think that Kim's point is well taken, that they have all basically grown up with this in their lives, like as the in the cultural fabric, the same way that we have. So there's going to be a little of that. But like, I don't think it's necessarily going to affect things, like it's not going to affect my enjoyment because I'm used to that, of course. And I don't think it's necessarily really going to affect them because these are performers or spiritual guides.
We'll get to him.
Oh boy. Yes. So I mean, yeah, I don't think that that's going to be a downside. I think that, their ability to reflect on it from, you know, inside, another similar situation that this situation created, like there's definitely this like hall of mirrors of cause and effect happening, but I think that's cool and interesting to see what comes out of that. What I'm interested to see is like Kim was saying that, you know, when you haven't seen people in a while and you like get caught up on stuff, but then it's like a whole week or a weekend that you're spending time together. And eventually you're going to figure out like someone's going to let it slip that they're not getting the vaccine or they're one of those abolish the penny weirdos. And then that's when shit gets real, actually. Yeah. So I am interested to see who that's going to be and where the conflicts are. And like based on the teaser for the season, it looks like shit gets pretty heavy and I'm here for it, especially after the last year or 18 months or really 5 years that we've all had as a country, I am interested in seeing how this franchise, like, I think started out as much more of a, like, high-minded PBS adjacent idea that then became like, dump a bunch of attention whores and booze in a pot and see what happens. Yeah. Conflict-based entertainment with a shot of 151 on the top that, you know, this is going to be fascinating. And even if it doesn't quite work, I think it's worth doing. Why not?
All right. Well, Sarah brought it up. Let's talk about Eric, the natural healer. Because when I was reviewing the season, I decided to take a little walk through Mr. Eric's Instagram and his website, which we'll link to. So Eric is now after the Real World, famously, he was the host of The Grind, as he says. And then he was like, and that's what I did in entertainment for a while. And then he's just sort of like, and so now he's a natural healer. He does, you know, various spiritual things. And so I now know that if you are having trouble with substances and you want to get rehab from Eric, you can. He will charge you $20,000 for 3 to 4 weeks of drug rehab.
What?
including a Native American medicine wheel journey, which, to my knowledge, Eric is not Native American.
No.
He also... Mm-hmm. On his Instagram was advertising a retreat over New Year's that on the Instagram ad said over New Year's it was going to be limited to 15 people. But if you went to his website, there was no limit on it. And it included a sweat lodge. But they then said we had to cancel it due to circumstances beyond our control. Like, was the circumstance the pandemic? Like, so when he shows up in the episode and he's like, surprise, I'm not there because I have COVID. It's like, not so much of a surprise, perhaps.
I literally have in my notes, is anyone surprised that out of everyone, Eric is the one who tested positive? No. If you had asked ahead of time, all of us familiar with the cast, to choose who it would be, we would have picked Eric. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I guess he's over it now because I have subsequently seen him like promoting the season in studio interviews. So that's great. I'm glad he's feeling better. No one wants anyone to be ill. But yeah, I'm really curious to, as Sarah said, like once the veneer is dropped and we're done having the like catching up conversations, like I really want to know how deep they get in on like, so Eric, what actually are what is your belief system? Because I'm curious, like what are the dimensions of it? Like how far does it go? Because there was some stuff on his Instagram where it was like, this is not the new normal. No social distancing. It's like, buddy, this is not serving you or your message, whatever it is.
Yeah. Here's my question for the group.
Yeah.
If you have to pick one of them to get help from, who do you pick? Eric Nies, formerly of The Grind, currently of Appropriation of Native American Ritual. Or... former nepotist actor, current life coach, Randy Spelling.
Randy.
What a horrible choice.
I know. Randy's Instagram started out for me as an ironic follow, and then I've actually been sort of soothed by it.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric's is one of those things, like when watching him on the show, on the reunion show, I can see how people get taken in by it because he seems so sincere. And I mean, I 100% think he believes in what he's saying. I don't think it's a scam on his part.
No. And he looks amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He hasn't aged at all. I mean, who knows what that's due to, but whatever. But yeah, it does seem like the kind of thing where you dig a little bit below the surface and suddenly it's, you know, that weird sex cult in upstate New York. Like, if you heard he was a cult, like, who's that actor who became a cult leader? Andrew Keegan?
Yes.
Is that who it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, he followed that path, you'd be like, yeah, that tracks. Sure.
Yeah. And this is someone who presents as perhaps, I was going to say, not smart enough to be a grifter, but, like, let's go with guileless.
Sure.
in the way of some actors and entertainers, mm-hmm. and that's the grift,
right?
That he's like, you think I'm too dumb to get you to pay me $20,000 for peyote drug rehab, even though that's a drug and I'm not licensed. Surprise!
Mm-hmm. I Tara, maybe you can answer this. I'd be willing to bet he does a lot of ayahuasca journeys. He's a shaman.
I believe that's right.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
That sounds about right.
All right, let's go through the rest of the cast. Julie, also, speaking of people who look incredible, Julie looks incredible.
And her, that's annoying.
When we get to see her daughter on FaceTime, it's like, wow, her daughter truly is her twin. They mm-hmm. they look so much alike. She looks great. Seems like she's having a lovely life with her Thomas Jane-looking husband in Alabama.
Yeah, I'm interested. Julie's maybe the person I'm the most interested in finding out what happens when they drop the facade. Because, mm-hmm. you know, on the one hand, when she was on the original show, she was 19. She was from Alabama. She was very sheltered, very naive. And while at the time, as a person of privilege myself, I may have taken her side over, say, Kevin's or Heather's mm-hmm. In discussions of race now, with the benefit of hindsight and education and awareness, you know, I think she was wrong. I understand why she said the things that she said at the time. So what I'm more interested in is what will she say now? I mean, she is a married mom who lives in Alabama. Mm-hmm. I don't know what her politics are, what her awareness is. And I'm sure they'll get into it. And so I think I'm the most interested to hear what she has to say, even more so than Becky, who I guess we'll get to. But I think Julie had a lot more potential to be an interesting person in the original. So I'm interested to see where she went with that.
Yeah, we can do Becky next. She still seems like she's full of shit to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like, if again, when I rewatched the original, I did see an argument between Becky and Kevin that I was just cringing.
Oh, that's a
at the time
one.
I probably thought it was a great discussion.
Yeah,
and now watching it now, I was just like, oh, Becky, no, mm-hmm. no, that's no. But I don't. Maybe she watches it and goes, yeah, that was a great conversation. We really had an exchange of views, which seems to be her take. So you know,
well. Yeah.
Meaning I talked and didn't get slapped.
Right.
Didn't do any listening, learned nothing. All right, Martika.
Right.
Yeah. I just think I'd like to see in the premiere, Heather, who I guess we can talk about mm-hmm. next, talks about how, you know, Kevin got so much shit for being the angry black man and for arguing with everybody. And now when you watch it, you're like, where's the lie?
Yeah.
Everything he was saying was true. And that's I 100% agree with that. And I noticed none of the white roommates were like, yeah, Heather. Now it's edited. It could have been edited out. I don't know.
Sure.
But I wanted to, I was hoping that they would also echo that, because that was the biggest, I think, takeaway I had from watching the original and the reunion was, boy, a lot of that stuff that we kind of were like, oh, he doesn't, you know, he's so angry and he's reverse racist. I never said that, but I know some people did.
Yes.
You look at now and go, boy, he was right on. And it was 30 years ago. And nothing's changed.
Yeah. My notes are like, we didn't deserve Kevin then and may not deserve him now.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seems like he's leaning back and waiting to pick his spots better, which is why Heather, the best, shows up with a full bar. One of the other great moments from rewatching the first season is a shot of her on the grind with Eric, and she's wearing a sweatshirt with her own face on it. And I want to know where I can buy it because it's amazing. Looking
Jersey
forward to
zone.
Seeing more of her.
Yeah, Heather's great. I especially love how she just kind of assumes everybody's going to help her with it. You know, she'll be like, can you go get this for me, and people mm-hmm. do it because she's Heather B.
Yeah,
and it's fantastic. I'm like, how do I get that to happen?
One of my favorite moments was her just like turning to, she has like a bottle of Malibu under her arm at the time too, which is like, oh, of course. And she's like, she says to Eric, I just found out you got COVID, my G. What the hell? Like, I just the phrasing of it. And then she calls Eric Knees my G is the best. Like, I just, Heather B, 2024. Now and forever.
And then Norman and Andre, I feel like we didn't see very much of them in the premiere. Norman in a camo baseball cap was not something I was expecting to see, but sure.
And forgot there was an Andre at all. AMA.
Yeah. Yeah, I have my notes are Andre is still unknowable. He says he wants to like make a bigger impression and not be reticent this time. Like, okay, good luck. I guess we'll see.
Good luck to all of us. Like, this is who I think is going to be the, like, here's how we know Bigfoot assassinated JFK guy that we're just going to be like, oh, fuck. And he just won't stop. Like, there will be no talking over him. I look forward to finding out.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but speaking of Paramount Plus and its big launch, sort of, I mean, really just reskinned CBS All Access, but the biggest thing to happen on CBS since it was created as a network was Oprah's interview of Harry and Meghan on Sunday. And if you went to Paramount Plus to try to find it on Sunday or late Sunday night or early Sunday morning or anytime on Monday or now or ever, you won't, because we only found this out like late on Monday afternoon. The reason is Harpo, which is Oprah's production company, held back the rights for it to be on streaming. So the only place that you could find it is on CBS.com. So, you know, when everyone was tweeting about it, I was like, all right, you know, I didn't set it to DVR, but like, maybe I'll check this out. But like, am I going to stream something from CBS.com to my television? No, I am an adult. Like, it just seems like the biggest, dumbest failure of this launch is to have this huge thing happen on essentially like your media company's platform and then have the thing that you've been telling everyone to go and see all your shit on, and then everyone's going to search it, look for Oprah, it's not there. On top of which, like, their whole news, how they sort all their 60 minute stuff is a complete mess. That's another side issue. I told Dave that and showed him, and it's like a complete fucking mess. But like, I just cannot believe what a mess this is, and people are mad about it. And not only that, They also did not time shift it. So everyone on the West Coast was like, so now I have to wait 3 hours to watch this shit? I can't. I've paid for this membership. I can't go to Paramount Plus and watch it live? No, you can't. So, like, I don't, A, know why this happened. I mean, I know Oprah is Oprah and she can just dictate the terms for whatever, which, you know, fine. I guess that's why you become Oprah. But on top of that, why is there also a CBS.com that has separate stuff? Why is there also a CBS app separate from Paramount Plus, which apparently there is? Why, now that Paramount Plus has launched and is supposed to be the umbrella for all Viacom content, why is there also a Showtime app that's separate? Why is there a Stars app that's separate? Like, put all of your shit under one umbrella. Like, leaving aside my feelings about cord cutters, no offense, Kim, those have been stated, you know how I feel. If that's where people are going, like, the goal should be reducing the number of different streaming platforms to the least number of streaming platforms there can possibly be. And the fact that this thing happened and you have to run all over the goddamn internet and like Google, why can't I watch this thing online to find out why it didn't happen on your Paramount Plus is a big, big black eye for Paramount Plus as a launch and as a platform. And I guess I'm never going to watch this thing because I'm still so mad about it. But, you know, congratulations to Oprah for when she sells this DVD that maybe I'll buy. I don't know. I'm not a crackpot. This was dumb.
DVD.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, crackpot, Tara Ariano.
Good Girls is back for season four on NBC. They, in season three, had a plot line in which Beth, the Christina Hendricks character, had hired a hitman played by Andrew McCarthy to kill Rio, the crime boss who is making her life hell and, like, extorting her to keep working for him. The season was clearly building to a finale in which that assassination or the attempted assassination was going to be the climax, but obviously that did not happen because they had to shut down production. So the episode that ended up being the finale, in air quotes, was kind of a shrug. But fortunately, unlike with Superstore and the Shy Fest finale, they were building toward that is now just never going to happen. Unless it's on the Beau and Cheyenne spinoff that I have very mixed feelings about. Good Girls could just pick up where they left off. So that's what happened in season four, which is good. So, you know, Retta and Stan find out their kid. They have a son who hasn't really had anything to do. They think he has ADHD, but it turns out he's a genius. So then they have another money stress because they have to figure out how to send him to a special school and pay for it. Beth's storyline revolves around her being great at everything, including weaseling out of health inspections at the hot tub store that she and Dean, her husband, played by Matthew Lillard, have opened as a front for their money laundering. And in the premiere, she also gets roped into making a bunch of Thai delicacies for a school carnival. And she's obviously super busy with her, like, nine criminal jobs. But by the end, she's done it. And I feel like in earlier seasons, we would have seen, like, a montage of her doing this. But here it just happens, which is annoying. Like, Beth is extremely incompetent, but she's not literally magic. And the other element of her character is that the other two characters who are supposed to be her criminal colleagues, one of whom is her sister, this is Annie, the Mae Whitman character, keep suggesting that Beth get them out of tough situations, but, like, by sleeping with whatever man is the problem. And I get it, but I hope the reason it keeps coming up is because it's leading to a fight where she pushes back on this and how fucked up it is that they expect this of her. But that said, the premiere also lets us know the reason the assassin's been holding off on doing her hit job is because he has also fallen in love with her. And again, I get it. It's Christina Hendricks. Annie's character is getting serviced the least as usual, which is an ongoing problem that I would like to see addressed. And then at the end, the Secret Service agents, including the big boss who is played by Jonathan Silverman, which is cute. I assume Andrew McCarthy just called him for a weekend at Bernie's reunion with everyone who is still alive. Because Bernie is dead, that actor. They've been investigating the counterfeiting operation. They arrest Dean. And without spoiling some very the next two episodes, which haven't aired yet, they provide important insight for the viewer into Dean and Beth's backstory. There have been a lot of times he's been a fuck up who's been in her way when I've just yelled, just kill him, because it's that kind of show. So it's important, though maybe a little late, that the show's finally letting us in on why she has not just killed him. And as I've probably said when I've talked about it every season, Good Girls doesn't get the respect it deserves because it's on network and people who haven't watched it probably dismiss it on that basis. And I've definitely done that with lots of shows, but it is really good. I wouldn't bother to critique it this granularly if I didn't care. And if you haven't watched and want to start it from the beginning, the first three seasons are on Netflix, and then the new season is NBC Sunday nights, and then it's on Hulu, of course, afterwards. And then I was going to talk about Game of Talents as my lowbrow show, which is the latest terrible, stupid Fox game show, but it's a stupid Fox game show. I'm not even going to bother to dignify it. Instead, I'm going to check back in on Married at First Sight.
Oh, Tara's got values now.
You can read my I did review it. It's a prime timer, so you can go and check it out. My values are, you know, medium.
From Tara Wild Cherries Ariano, Game of Talents, not worth my time.
I mean, consider what I'm replacing it with, which is a check-in on what's going on Married at First Sight, which is, you remember what I talked about earlier in the season? I said one of the grooms got another lady pregnant. That has finally come out on the show. So he, this guy's name is Chris. The woman that they had him marry is named Paige. He finds out on his honeymoon that he got his ex-fiance pregnant. She's 6 weeks pregnant, which means they were totally fucking while he was in the process of going through, like, the Married at First Sight casting process.
For sure.
He only told Paige because the producers was like, well, we know, so you have to tell her. Like, they broke the fourth wall to basically be like, we're forcing the issue. He takes her into the bathroom at their hotel and, like, turns on the shower and the tap and makes her take off her mic and then tells her with the door closed as if she's not going to come out and be like, well, he just told me that he got another broad pregnant, which she does. So then I'm pretty sure, I don't know this, allegedly, that they just, like, pump her full of Xanax to, like, just get her through the next several however many days of their honeymoon so she doesn't bolt, because she seems very, like, unnaturally calm while she's dealing with all this information. So as it comes out to the other couples, because they see each other while they're on this trip, they're all on the same honeymoon. The other grooms are like, hey, Chris, now that you know that you're having this baby, you got to man up. And he's like, I did man up. I told Paige. And they're like, what? Like, that's, he thinks that's the end of his obligation. And then the other wives are like, you probably should be, you know, extra nice to Paige because you just dropped this bomb on her if you want to stay married. And he's like, I am being extra nice to her. I told her. Like, again, just thinks imparting the information is the end of his responsibility. So then they're flying back from their honeymoon, which is in Las Vegas. They all live in Atlanta. He tells her at the airport, I'm not coming back with you. I'm going to Chicago to, like, clear my head for a couple of days. So she moves into the place that they're all living during the experiment by herself. He calls her from this thing and says, I'm not going to stay in the marriage. I've already talked to a divorce attorney. I'm going to get back with my ex. Comes back to Atlanta and then says, I think the two of us should sit down with my ex and talk about this situation.
Why?
So they do. This what? Woman comes in. She is stunning. I don't know how he pulled her in the first place. Like, I don't blame him for trying to get back with her. She's gorgeous. And Paige is very beautiful, too. He's already, by the way, told her that, like, he doesn't know if he wants to stay married to her because he's not attracted to her. He has, by the way, also been fucking her every day of their marriage, even as he's been saying, I don't know if you're hot enough for me. So then they all sit down having this conversation. Oh, Paige is very, very calm. She's already, like, mentally checked out of this. She's like, if you don't want to be married, that's fine. Tells this woman, like, I don't hold any ill will towards you. And if you want to get back with him, that's fine with me. And this woman is like, wait, what? I don't want to get back with Chris. Chris is sitting right there. He just assumed she would want to take him back because she was pregnant. She's like, nope. And then he's like, this conversation's over. It was the greatest. Paige is like,
no, the greatest would be if the two ladies made out and then they got married.
That
please
would be
let
great.
This happen. Universe, hear my cry.
So that's what's up with Married at First Sight. Should he have gone through the casting process? No. Has it been an amazing season? Yes. So that's what you've been missing if you haven't been watching.
Oh my God.
Feel free to catch up.
I never want to watch this show. I just want Tara to tell me what happened on it every week. Can you just call me every week and be like, sure, so listen to this shit and then just tell me.
Oh, for my plug, last week I was on the Slash Film Cast with our friend Dave Chen of the Chen Check-In, and as also Devinder Hardwar, past guest, and Ingo Kong, also past guest. We talked about Minari, among many other things, so I will link that in the show notes. Minari is great. You should watch it.
Kimbri.
Okay, so I wanted to circle back, to use a term everyone hates, on and close the loop on WandaVision, because it just ended, and I had listened, because I don't have a commute anymore, I get really behind on podcasts, so I just a few days ago listened to the Extra Hot Great, where you guys talked about the premiere of WandaVision, and I'm sure you all remember, probably don't, one of the things you talked about was if kids would watch the show or would like the show. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to report back, as a person who has kids, that we... Jim, my husband, and I didn't watch the first few episodes. We're kind of like, yeah, whatever. He's an MCU guy. I'm not. One of our kids is. One of our kids is not. We planned it that way.
It was during this family apart.
I know. It is. Yes.
There's like tape down the middle of the house.
We do. Yeah. Well, the problem is the other one and I don't have like a unifying, like if it was MCU versus not DC, God forbid, but something more interesting. You know, that'd be interesting.
Shots fired.
But then we saw all these really great reviews of WandaVision. I was like, should we be watching WandaVision? Jim was like, oh. So we started watching. And one of our kids, the one who's the MCU guy, started watching like with the next episode. And then the last kid started watching. They're 11 years old, by the way. Started watching the next episode. And then we started watching it like as a nerdy family every Friday night. We would get fish fry because it's Lent from the takeout from St. Mary's. And then we would watch WandaVision together. And my kids loved it in a couple different levels. Like one of them was really into like the lore and the theories, and he would go after every episode and look up YouTube videos about like, oh, but this color, like he was really into the fake ads in the sitcom stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, one of the things you guys brought up, would kids even like know, not even kids, but would younger people know like the allusions to classic sitcoms? And I asked them, and they were like, well, I did because I read about it on YouTube, or I saw a video about it on YouTube.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. The other thing that was really interesting to me was this was their first experience watching a show that they had to wait for. That they've never, and believe me, they watch a lot of TV. They're my kids. But they had never watched a show before where they had to wait for the next episode for a week.
They don't watch like Survivor when it airs or anything like that?
No, no. Oh, once in a while, they'll join me to watch it or whatever, but no. You know, everything they watch is on streaming. They don't start watching it until the whole season's available.
I see. Then, got it.
Usually. And they'll just rewatch something else. But yeah, so it was the first time that they had to wait, and they would get so excited. Like, aww. Mom, it's like in the morning when we'd wake up, Mom, it's Friday. It's WandaVision day. We're going to watch it tonight, tomorrow, like Thursday. Tomorrow's WandaVision. Like, they would get so excited about it, which was really fun, you know, as a family. That's the first time we've had like a show that we had to wait for, that we all, you know, we watch streaming shows and stuff together. So I asked them at dinner the other night if they were disappointed in the finale, because I know a lot of people were. I was sort of like, whatever. Like, I was never that invested, so I didn't really care. It was just like something to watch. But they were very invested. And they said they didn't love the finale, but they're not disappointed in the fact that all of the theories didn't pan out. Because I was kind of nervous while we were watching it, as you guys have been. We've all had our hearts broken by The X-Files, Lost, any of those mystery shows that you got really into, Buffy, you know, all of those. And then it never, ever, ever is what you want it to be, just because you're so deep into it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, this is going to be their first experience with that. But they kind of weren't. They were like, no, it's fine. Whatever. You know, so in conclusion for that, I liked WandaVision. I think we're going to watch the Winter Soldier one that starts up next week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll be as into that. I liked this one more because it was a little more comedic.
Right.
And my kids really loved it. I wanted to report back on that. But I wanted to see what you guys thought about WandaVision overall, if you finished watching it.
Well, I did think it was cool up to a point. And I was just bummed out that at the end of it, like, I felt like I had played myself in a way that I'd let myself be interested in all of the cool sort of world building around the sitcom, you know, all of the spoofy homages, forgetting, oh, right, this is all just a commercial for a movie that's going to be next. Forgetting, like, oh, yeah, this can't actually be its own independent thing. It has to hook into like their whole marketing plan for fucking Doctor Strange 2. And so then, like, as annoyed as I was by what I thought was a very boring, rote, expected finale, it was like, that's not the show's fault. That's my fault for expecting it to be anything other than what it was, which is part of a giant machine. Like, you know, it is what it is.
That's a healthy take on it, Tara, I would say. Up until like maybe like the second last episode, like it really felt like something very different inside of, you know, the Marvel machine. But it's inevitable at a certain point it has to return from whence it came.
Yeah.
And that is what happened. You know, like it was interesting that they were able to build this sort of like alternate universe, this sort of very strange mix of comedy and dread and dealing with grief and all this stuff that was the first half or first three quarters of the series. But inevitably, it was time to return back into pew-pews and flying this and that's. And yeah, I mean, I felt the same way, but you're right. It's on us for not preparing ourselves critically for that happening and responding, perhaps not being honest with ourselves.
Yeah. I'll just add to when we did back in Mark 1 of this podcast, we had an all crackpot episode. And one of my crackpot things was there will never be a truly great superhero movie because superhero stories are inevitably kind of silly. And at the time, my argument was like, there's only so much you can do with a story where it's like, you know, you start from a premise of like, hey, I'm Sam, I'm a prison abolitionist, like, ooh, and I got clawed by a tiger from Jupiter, so I'm also Tiger Man. I have space tiger powers too. Like that's kind of dumb. Like that's what always brings it down to earth, as it were. And I think like there have been what I would consider great superhero movies since then. Logan, I would say, is like maybe one. But what I hadn't considered at the time was, like, how much bigger the MCU would get as just, like, a too-big-to-fail enterprise. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just as a giant money-making thing. And, like,
that's part of Disney. You know,
yes, exactly. Yeah. So that was something that I hadn't considered. Like, the other reason that a superhero movie can't be truly great, which is that it has to propel to the next thing in a way that doesn't let whatever thing you're watching, like, be an artistic achievement on its own. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my other thing I've been watching is with the absence of, I love a competitive reality show. I certainly am watching The Challenge. Sarah spoke about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But most of the other competitive reality shows are not airing because they can't film because COVID. So I have turned to international reality shows, of which there are many, mm-hmm. English speaking. I started with, it's sort of like a gateway drug. I started with Survivor Australia. These are all available on YouTube if you want to watch them. Then I started watching The Amazing Race Australia, the current season, which they're just going around Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also watch a little bit of Survivor New Zealand. Who knows where I'm going to go next? You never know. I was thinking if somebody's really took up like a Duolingo practice over quarantine, maybe they want to test their language skills because there's like Mexico and there's Germany and whatever. But anyway, if you're a competitive reality person who's missing your shows and has already rewatched Survivor like me two, maybe three times most seasons, then, you know, that's a nice alternative. For my plug, I don't have anything personally to plug, so I wanted to just talk about something I've been enjoying besides anything in the Extra Hot Great Family, and that is Alan Sepinwall's podcast, Too Long Didn't Watch, which just finished its first season. I just saw the last episode of season one drop today. And the premise, if you're unfamiliar, is that Alan finds a celebrity who has never seen a usually very popular show. And they watch together the first episode and then the very last episode. And in between, he has the celebrity predict what they think might happen and talk about it. It's just really interesting. If you're somebody who – the celebrities he's had thus far have all been pretty interesting. The premiere episode was Jon Hamm talking about Gossip Girl, which I thought was pretty funny.
Gorgeous.
He's also had Gillian Jacobs talking about The Good Wife. Which she actually was in the premiere episode and then had to not continue because she got the job on Community. So that was kind of interesting to hear her, you know, talk about that and see the last episode. There's been some great ones. You guys can look it up. It's part of Rolling Stone. If you just Google Too Long Didn't Watch, Alan Sepinwall, he said the second season should be coming out soon. I think these were all probably recorded from the way they speak. They were all recorded over the summer, last spring. They've been in the can for a while. So I would imagine if he's been recording it all, that the second season should come out fairly soon. And if you like TV and you're caught up on your Extra Hot Greats, it's a good thing to check out.
Nice.
Sarah D. Bateg.
Well, there are a few things that once something happens in the world, it's like the Twitter bunt signal is activated. Like if a celebrity says anything favorable about raisins, for instance, or like that, you know, Big Tomatoes official Twitter account does something crazy. And cop rock is one of those topics. Also, but we'll get into that later in the podcast. So when John Oliver used cop rock to segue into a segment about police raids and no-knock warrants, naturally, many, many people reached out to me about it. And Adam Grossworth, with whom I recapped cop rock in sadly granular detail at previously.tv, RIP,
the site, not Adam. He's fine. He was like, you should just watch it. Like, it's a John Oliver segment. It's only half an hour. And the cop rock bits are pretty short, but he uses the absolute worst song, which we are still making fun of between each other. It's called Baby Merchant. This is exactly the right way to use cop rock, which is ridiculous, to segue into something that is ridiculous, but in a very dark, bad, unbelievable way. This segment of John Oliver is absolutely the best thing cop rock has ever even been in the same room as. And I have to admire Oliver for somehow getting from the over-singing of the phrase racial overtones to the death of Breonna Taylor in 30 seconds without anyone involved getting a hernia. It's actually really amazing. John Oliver is like, I don't know how to describe it exactly. I guess low-hanging fruit, or like, I think it's soothing to a certain kind of progressive to listen to him ranting with this accent and like cursing about all the mistakes that our system is making. It can be a little bit, it can make you feel a little bit cheap. It's a little bit MSNBC-ish that way. Both things my husband loves to self-soothe with. But this was an interesting segment. If you like John Oliver, you will enjoy this. If you like cop rock, what's wrong with you? Don't watch this. It gets pilloried. But if you've always sort of wondered, like, why is cop rock such a joke? Like, this was an excellent distillation of how absolutely bonkers it was that this not only existed, but that it wasn't the only like musical concept on TV at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, Cop Rock on Last Week Tonight. I have watched it. It was well done. We will link to that segment in the show notes. For my plug, speaking of ill-advised singing projects, over at Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, March Madness 2021 is in the ultimate teen idol Sweet 16 phase. As you're listening to this, voting is closing today. In the Sweet 16, we for once don't have any particularly close matchups, but if you feel the need to avenge the Bay City Rollers and their moose knuckles, you still have time to do that. Go to patreon.com/mastass. You don't have to be a Patreon of ours. You just have to have a free account to vote, and we encourage you to do that. patreon.com/mastass.
There exists somewhere in my sister's/parents' old house a picture of me wearing a Bay City Rollers t-shirt that my sister got for me. I had no idea what it was, but I wore it around. And I thought it was cool, but I'm going to guess it's not.
No, now it is. It like sort of cycles through. Yeah. I think we're back at a it's cool segment.
This week on the mid-season finale, 911 Lone Star, kind of a letdown, I'm going to be honest with you. Yep. It wasn't goofy enough because they decided to do a all connected storyline where it starts off a little bit bonkers, but it's something you've seen before, which is the guy robbing the bank with the suicide bomber vest sort of detonation device on it, except he's being forced to do it. And that leads into this fire at an apartment building where the bombs were being made, and that explodes, which leads to those criminals kidnapping the medic team, you know, in that we can't take him to the hospital kind of way, because then the cops will get him. So that's like the episode. So it's not like there's no volcanoes, there's no bodies falling from the sky onto another already dead body.
No minefield.
Yeah, no minefields. No. It was a little like static compared to other 911. So I will give it kudos for a weird meta moment at the end. Like, everything's wrapped up, everybody's safe. And then like they take the two characters, one's on the fire team. The other one is one of the the dispatcher at the 911. They're just driving in their car. They're having like a 30-second conversation, and then they just like fall off a bridge into Colorado River, I'm going to assume. And then like the instant they hit the water, it's like a smash cut to the production title card. It was like so quick and abrupt. Or like, oh, we got to fit this in. We got to do something into this episode. All right. Two people in peril. Let's go. You and you in the car. Go. Fall off the bridge. Title card. We're done. See you in the summer.
Wow.
That's what I like about Texas.
All right. And now on the next EEHG, tune in for Essential TV Adams. Characters named Adam, who are the most essential on TV. That is on the next EEHG, available to all our sponsors at any level. Go to patreon.com/extrahotgreat to find out more. And then right here on the next EHD Prime, it is the Netflix show Waffles and Mochi with the rescheduled Alison Herman of The Ringer. So look forward to that next week. The Raisin. As simple and delicious as it is, performing solo in your mouth or inside an oatmeal cookie is no longer the official fruit of the Extra Hot Great podcast.
Woohoo!
As of today, the humble orange is now the official fruit of EHG. And here are some reasons to consider the orange over the raisin. You know the color in advance. No worrying about sultana oranges, my friends. If you only have one raisin left and you have two hungry people, more difficult to split raisin into two equal parts.
True.
If you substitute oranges for raisins one-to-one in a personal-sized box of Sunmaids, you'll be sending your kid to school with a lunch pail the size of a Honda Accord, and that's pretty funny. It's weird to ask for RJ at the breakfast table. And finally, you can't peel a raisin and pretend you're wearing Hannibal Lecter's escape face. So there's another advantage of the orange.
Absolutely true.
Yes, the orange, nature's juicy treat, is now the official fruit of the Extra Hot Great podcast, at least until someone pays money to change it. Oranges, the fruit that doesn't tear friends and family apart.
Extra credit topic comes to us from Lauren. It is called Make New Friends. And Lauren writes, I miss seeing my friends. Relatable. I want the panelists to create an all-star friend group of people that you would like to hang out with and you think would have good friend group chemistry. Only one person per show. The positions to fill. One, the center. Two, the weirdo. Three, the horn dog slash mean one. Four, the love interest. Five, the couple. So the couple is the exception. They can both be from the same show. Lauren's lineup. Number one, the center, Jane from Jane the Virgin. Her weirdo is Dina from Superstore. Her horn dog slash mean one is Joey from Friends. Horn dog, on the horn dog side. Number four, the love interest, Pacey from Dawson's Creek. Love it. And her couple, Jane and Brad from Happy Ending. So we're going to go around and just go by role. Giving our picks. I'll go first. My center, Carla Espinosa from Scrubs, the great Judy Reyes. And for this, for the purpose of this exercise, we're going to pretend she did not end up with Turk from Scrubs. Kim is our guest. Who is your center?
This is the one I had the hardest time with, honestly, because I was trying to think, like, who is just sort of a normal person? And TV shows these days don't tend to be about normal people. But I came up with Annie from Shrill, the A.D. Bryant.
Oh, love it.
From Shrill was my center.
Nice. Sarah, who is yours?
I sort of had the same problem as Kim. This was the toughest one for me to pick, too. But it's mostly because, like, main characters can tend to be a little bit boring so that they don't offend anyone.
Right.
Not true of Veronica Mars. Plus, she has all the tools for me to be nosy, and I enjoy that.
All right, Dave.
Yeah, when I thought of the sender, I was thinking, like, it's got to be somebody who's sort of oatmeal-y, and what I wanted out of a center is somebody that's just going to stop bullshit when it happens, because I feel like the mix of archetypes that she has chosen for us to nominate people for is sort of volatile. So I went with Admiral Adama from Battlestar Galactica, who's just going to sit in the corner, not really do much, but when, like, shit starts to get rowdy or, like, people start to get, he'll be like, bang, bang, bang on the table, and then he'll just say maximum 9 words, and then everything returns to normal.
Okay. Next up, our weirdo. I went with Gina from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. No longer on the show, still in our hearts. Gina was right. As her hoodie said, Gina. Kim.
I chose John Ralphio Saperstein from Parks and Recreation, because he's my favorite weirdo. I almost went with his sister, but I think she might be too much for me to take. I think I can handle John Ralphio.
Okay. Sarah.
I took Darius from Atlanta. He's not exactly a really weirdo. I think untraditional thinker is more apt, but I think definitely once this group is fully composed, you will see that you need a Darius who is sort of like open to the possibilities of things instead of being like, this is going to be a fucking nightmare like everybody else on the show. Nice. Dave.
I had two that I was flip-flopping between because they have different energies. So if you wanted like quiet and low maintenance weirdo, I was going to go with Log Lady from Twin Peaks.
Sure. Yep.
Because I think that she pairs well with Adama. She also would just be sitting in a corner, not really doing very much.
True.
When she does say something, everybody will pay attention, but that's going to be very rare. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of that equation, I was going for like uneasy excitement, you know, like this is a weirdo, you're not quite sure what he's going to do. And that's Richard Harrow from Boardwalk Empire, wow. Path of Face, that guy. Because yep. He's like,
wow. All right.
He's reserved, but then there's like that bubbling energy where you know something is going to snap and yep. He's going to like not be crazy, but he's going to overreact. And the carnage from that overreaction will be like the weird energy that like sort of sets up the sequel series to my friend group.
Gotcha.
Okay. Next up, the horn dog / mean one. I decided to go mean, went with one of my favorite mean characters in all of television, Carrie Heffernan of The King of Queens. Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. A true meanie for the ages, the Leah Remini character from King of Queens. Truly a real nasty bitch who I love. Kim.
Well, I went with your weirdo is my mean one, Gina Linetti.
There's a lot of crossover. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, she could also be the horn dog. Like, yep. Who's to say?
True.
Gina Linetti from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Love her so much. Mm-hmm. And would love to see her take on John Ralphio. So that'd be good.
Sarah.
My mean one is a legendary mean one of the WB and also horn dog sort of secondarily, as it turns out, Ms. Megan Rotundi, your queen and mine from Felicity.
Beautiful. Dave.
Again, I had two choices. Ultimately, I went with Lilith from Cheers.
yes.
But I also considered the Dowager Countess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, you know, her just basically slagging everybody else 24/7 might get a little tiresome to the rest of the group. So that's why I kind of went with Lilith in the end, just for the sake of group dynamics.
Fair enough.
Fair. All right.
Love interest. This was tough because Pacey is such a good one, and I didn't want to copy Lauren. So instead,
I know, same.
I went Dawson.
I did not go with Dawson. I went with another sweetie from yesteryear, Dwayne Wayne of A Different World, the Kadeem Hardison character with the flip-up glasses. We know him. We love him. We saw him with Whitley for many years. Dwayne Wayne. Kim.
Mine was probably influenced by something we're going to discuss shortly. I went with the bad boy, Doug Ross from ER, because not only is he George Clooney, I mean, need I say more, especially George Clooney in that era. But he's a pediatrician and I have kids, so you know, that could be convenient as well.
Discounts.
Sarah.
I also considered an ER doc, but in the end, I went with the hot priest from Fleabag. He just seemed to pair better with the spiky weirdness already in the friend group.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, and, I really thought you were going to take Ben from Felicity. Well, I can't have two from the same show. I forgot.
Yeah. Alas. Dave.
Joan Holloway.
Oh, Joan and Adama. I love it.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, finally, our couple.
Oh, wait. Is that a way to Dave? I thought it was just like for me.
Oh, I thought it was a couple. It was a love interest for your center. I mean, either way.
I'm interested to see how that would play out as well.
Either way.
Yeah, okay.
So couple had a lot of options for this one, but ultimately I went with Lisa and Johnny from News Radio. And here's why. Johnny's going to prison. He's not going to be around. I do like them as a couple. I think they're really funny. You know, we don't necessarily need him around all the time. This friend group is already getting pretty big. So that was part of my consideration. Lisa and Johnny from News Radio. Kim.
Yeah, I was with you that I had a hard time thinking of both parts of a couple. You know, it's easy to think of one or the other, but both. But I'm really happy with the one I came up with, which was Stuart and Debbie Sanderson from The Grindr. Fred Savage and his wife. I remember when I used to watch The Grindr, I always used to want to hang out with them. They seem like such a great, low-key, fun couple.
Yep.
So that's who I chose, Stuart and Debbie Sanderson from The Grindr.
Excellent. Sarah?
The Taylors from Friday Night Lights. Sure. Little sports talk, little hair care tips, something for everybody. Wine. Yeah, a wrap dress to borrow at any time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's mine.
Beautiful. Dave.
Well, I didn't read the fine print in the bylaws for this challenge, so mine are from the same show. I did a little mix and match, so
that's fine.
I hope that's okay.
I'm sure that's fine.
My couple is Elsbeth Tassaloni from The Good Wife,
yes,
and NoHo Hank from Barry. I don't know whether I'm setting themselves up for destructive, you know, failure, or whether this is going to be the best matchmaking ever in the history of the universe. Either way, is going to make for a good show.
And neither of them is the weirdo, but they could be. You have, like, weirdo subs.
Yep, exactly.
True.
Oh, dear, that backwards canon music can mean only one thing. It is time for The No Knack, a terrible episode of what is otherwise considered a good show is what we're after. Presenting this week is Sean. Take it away, Sean.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. This is Sean. I'm submitting an episode of ER for The No Knack. I started to rewatch ER and Hulu right after The Good Doctor came out, and I was mad it wasn't as good as ER. ER was an excellent show for around 7 seasons. It continued on for about 5 more, losing its spark with cast changes and, you know, just the years going by. Choosing a No Knack from the last few seasons would be like choosing a No Knack Simpsons from the most recent 10 years. What's the point? This is from the seasons where the show was actually firing on all cylinders. What do you want from a good episode of ER? Some personal drama that's weaved in through the cases of the week. Fast-paced, large cast of characters. Normally, if you don't like one case or a character arc, you just wait 5 minutes. There's going to be one you like. Also, so many fantastic guest stars. Binging the series, I keep recognizing young, up-and-coming actors and beloved older ones. There are definitely other plot lines that annoyed me more, but they're always interspersed with a great medical drama. I was expecting Dr. Green dying of cancer for about a season to annoy me, but it wasn't really that bad in retrospect. This episode slows to a contemplative grind and unfortunately only features 2 of the main cast. I present to you season 4, episode 7, Fathers and Sons. So this episode takes place as Dr. Ross and Dr. Green travel through California cleaning up after Doug Ross's deceased deadbeat dad. It really feels like a speed bump when binging through the episodes. Clip 1.
Listen, we don't have to do this. We could find some air conditioning, get something to drink. No, we're in no hurry. Come on, let's get this over with.
I looked for other things to clip, but the whole thing's just unremarkable. Nothing's interesting. The background sounds are ticking clocks and crickets. I stopped it 3 times to see if the episode was almost over. Okay, summarize what happens. They travel to California, visit the funeral of a man who was killed by Doug Ross's drunk driving dad. They solve the mystery of Doug Ross's unknown stepmom. Doug Ross confesses his love for Carol. They visit Mark's parents. Mark's father is a dick and is sick. Carol shows up for Doug, and then they scatter Doug's father's ashes in the desert. Almost any of these dialogue scenes could have taken place at the hospital while working on cases. There really just isn't a whole lot to this episode. If I wanted to watch a show that takes place outside the ER, I would watch another show. You can't blame them for trying. Several episodes broke the model successfully. Nurse Carol getting caught in a corner store robbery in season 3. Doug Ross saved a kid trapped in a storm drain on season 2. But ultimately, they actually get to the ER. George Clooney had become a star, so they give him this showcase. Honestly, his breaking all the rules character is pretty self-indulgent and doesn't age well. George Clooney does have that spark. He's beautiful to look at. But there's just so much space in this episode. It drives me nuts. I hope that you agree with me and will induct it into the no-neck.
Thank you, Sean. Kim, you chose this from our list of submissions, which, by the way, thank you to everyone who has submitted their canons and no-necks.
Yes,
and
thank you.
If you have more, keep them coming. We love to hear them. Kim, start us off. What did you think of this episode and of Sean's presentation?
Well, great presentation by Sean. And like him, I also did an ER rewatch a couple years ago before it was on Hulu. I did it the hard way. I earned it when it was on Pop and I had a DVR it every day.
Oh my God.
And fast forward through the commercials. And then like, as I was finishing, you know, it took like a year. And as I was finishing, then suddenly it popped up on Hulu and I was super mad. But I just, during the pandemic, started watching just kind of here and there, you know, nothing else on. I'll watch an episode of ER. And I almost have gotten up to this point, which is season four. I'm in season three. So I was kind of familiar with where the show was. And I don't necessarily, I mean, I guess he says this, that a departure from the format doesn't make for automatically a bad episode. It didn't bother me that there was no ER in the ER this time. There are other departures from the ER, especially in the later seasons where like they go to Africa and, mm-hmm. you know, that mm-hmm. were not as interesting to me. And then also, so I guess what I'm trying to say is I liked this episode, but I think a lot of it was because I have been watching up and what led up to this.
Right.
And I just saw the episodes where Doug Ross's father returns for the first time. And Doug is very, you know, reticent to get involved with him and thinks his dad's probably trying to scam him. But then he kind of falls into it and he agrees to meet his dad at the Bulls game. And then he stands outside the Bulls game and his dad doesn't show up and it's kind of sad. And then his dad takes off with Mark Haugenberger's money. Doug ends up sleeping with his dad's girlfriend, played by Mark Haugenberger. And his dad takes off with like $250,000. And so I had just watched all of that. So this maybe hit me a little bit harder because I was really into the whole Doug and his dad storyline.
Right.
I wished that it had about 50% less Mark's family. Mm-hmm. When it hit, I was really into the episode until they hit Mark's family. And then I was like, ugh, this storyline. Because, you know, I remembered what comes next, where he goes back after his mom dies and his dad and Cynthia shows up with him and he doesn't want her there. Ugh. I didn't like any of that. But I did like the break from the ER. So I don't know that I would agree that this is the worst of a bad series. And I'm not going to lie, maybe 40% of my enjoyment of this episode was George Clooney in a black t-shirt and jeans. Not going to lie. It was nice to see him not in a doctor's coat the whole time. Mm-hmm. Weird scene with Mark and Doug wrestling in their underwear. That was strange. That sort of took me out of it a little bit.
Mark's
I don't
sexy,
know. Maybe that's something
sexy,
dudes do. In
pillowy
the
boxers.
Yeah, when they share a motel room, they just wrestle and spray beer on each other in their boxers. I found that a little odd. But yeah, overall, I didn't mind it. But like I said, I think a lot of that is just because I was steeped in the lore of what came before this and what led to this.
So this episode isn't no-knack worthy because it's not a bad episode. It's a nothing episode. So there's nothing that sort of lowers it to the level of a truly kind of bad example of a really good show. Like, if you think about what the fuck moment of like the Romano helicopter death, like those are the kind of moments that may contribute to a no-knack episode. I'm not speaking if that episode is a no-knack, I don't remember anything else about that episode except, of course, that. But this episode is just sort of like there. And I don't think like they did themselves any favors by doing this sort of Emmy baitish out of the hospital episode. I'm sure it was cheap to film. I wouldn't even call it a failed experiment. It's just like, it was there and I saw what they were trying to do, but it just was like, very, very average. And like, there's some elements that are just like, oh, come on, guys, like the dad, like, could he be any more of a cartoon? Guys, you can do better. You have done better, but you can also do so much worse. And you have. And that's where this episode lies.
I'll go next because obviously Dave and I watched it together and we discussed it after we finished. And I agree. This was not, to me, did not rise to the brutal level of, or sink, I guess, full of no neck that we would expect. Like, it's not great. I agree with Sean about that. It is certainly Emmy begging in a way that is off-putting and gross. Like, I definitely see what they're doing with this as an actor's showcase for, especially George Clooney, secondarily Anthony Edwards. But even what they're trying to do with the storyline about, like, you know, Doug's dead dad, is like, they don't even go far enough. It's like they show up to the funeral of the guy he killed, like, just in their gross street clothes. They haven't showered. Like, it's so disrespectful. They open up the trunk and it's full of baby shit. So it's like, and also his wife maybe was pregnant. Like, there's all these questions that just sort of, like, I felt like got dropped. It was just handled in a very weird way. Although the ghost of Cynthia, who Doug hates, haunting the proceedings, because I vaguely remembered her too. Like, oh, poor Cynthia, Marishka, yeah. We love you. Better days are coming for you.
What a performance by Hargate too.
So true.
Cringo.
Yeah, she really went for it.
She did.
Yeah, this is not a good episode, but it's not the worst. So I see what Sean was trying to do. Like, it was a bad episode in the middle of a good run for ER, but it's not bad enough, in my opinion. Sarah.
Yeah, it's pretty bad though. Every cliche, with like city characters going into the country or the desert is present. There's Dave Brubeck, like, yeah, we're aware that we're watching a couple white dudes that don't think you needed that soundtrack cue, but congrats on being able to afford Take Five. Take another five and use something else. I have never been a fan of the daddy issues episodes of this show. Once Holling shows up, like, that actor is good enough that it gives a little snap. And Mark is such a fucking brat that I'm always like, Team Holling, like, pass the smokes, hit him upside the head. But I think maybe this might have been pitched more appropriately as an I am not a crackpot, but bad dads come in like three flavors on TV.
Yeah.
One is this, like, this particular rakish breed of shitty deadbeat dad. There is a way, way higher concentration of them on TV and in movies than there is in real life. And like, my husband was raised by a guy like this, but it's like, that's not normal. That's not like everyone's experience. I'm not exactly sure what writers' rooms are working out unless it is like Emmy bait for Clooney and to a lesser degree Anthony Edwards. And then maybe we should have like a separate no knack for, like, we see what you were trying to do, but no knack. And then another kind of bad dad is the retired military martinet who is unable to express himself except in brown liquor. Like, guys, find something else to do. So with that in mind, this was a difficult sit because I think this, at the time that this aired, was still considered a little bit more fresh and insightful than it actually was. Certainly at this distance, no. I am a big fan of George Clooney, the person and cultural force, but his acting was not there for this yet. In my opinion.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't terrible. There were a couple of good shots in there. There were a couple of like funny line deliveries. I enjoy Holling. It wasn't terrible. It was just like, in my rewatch of ER, I skipped over this episode. Cause it was like, I understand what happens. Like, father-son shit. Am I right?
next. So, yeah, I mean, let's vote on it, but I think we're all probably of an accord.
Although coming from different directions sometimes, so that's interesting. Yeah. So let us put this to the official vote. Kim Reed, no knack worthy?
No.
Tara?
I would say no, but Sean, you should have leaned harder on Doug's terrible dad losing their TV in a poker game, the worst thing you can possibly do. But yes, I'm voting not no knack for me.
Sarah D. Bundy?
Also is really disgusting taste in jewelry, and I'm from New Jersey and watch 90210, but anyway, it's a no on the no knack, but excellent presentation, and please send other stuff. We would love to hear from you.
Yes, thank you, Sean. No from me as well. So that means, unfortunately, no bad orchestra music this week, and also that ER, otherwise known as Series 4, so Season 4, we're not in the UK, Episode 7. Fathers and Sons, you're hereby not inducted.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's IMDb TV. Yes, that's really a thing. They're having a good month. They are getting on the map twofold. First up is a true crime series about the murder of James Jordan, Michael Jordan's father. And second, is getting a spinoff that Titus Welliver will also be in. His daughter will also be in it, which, okay, like she was like, she was kind of a nothing burger, no neck entry herself. But if it's like some of the same team, I trust them. And the Honey Chandler character played by Mimi Rogers, who I've always enjoyed, her in her snappy suits and retorts. So yeah, it's like basically all the good stuff about Bosch, including Bosch. So you wonder why they bothered canceling it.
I know. It sounds like after Bosch. Like just. Yeah.
I hope not. Jesus. But yes, yeah. That running gag on this podcast lives to fight another day. Sorry.
And speaking to Tara's point earlier, IMDb TV owned by Amazon. Why don't they just make it part of Amazon Prime? So you have one less fucking thing to keep track of and not know about, frankly.
And just fucking uncancel Bosch and transfer some characters if the actors don't want to do it anymore. Do we have to do everything?
Apparently. Tara, loser of the week.
Yes.
Well, speaking of streaming services, HBO Max, because I guess they're so excited about the Snyder Cut of Justice League that they decided to make it available a little bit early to users who were just trying to fucking watch Tom and Jerry. There was a brief period where a glitch made it so that when people clicked on Tom and Jerry, the Snyder Cut of Justice League started to play. So, whoops. But also,
why is Jerry so angry?
Jerry's got issues.
Speaking about having issues, you know what time it is?
It's game time!
Woo-wee! It is the 11th game time of the season. The scores are Kim limbering up here on Zoom.
Literally stretching right now. Love it.
Sarah has 4. One win today gives her the season victory. Tara has 4. Also good win today. Value guests behind with 2. Can Kim keep the season going for one more week with a victory today?
Spoiler.
Today we are playing
Let the Wide Stick Give You the Edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
The Wide Stick That Gives You the Edge. A concept from David Ellis Dickerson with questions provided by the great folks at EHG Assist. For
Thanks,
the troubles,
guys.
Both parties get an extra credit topic of their choosing. Cha-ching. This is how it works. In this game, I will read you a description of a TV show in the style of the Menin benefit line, the wide stick that gives you the edge. Okay. So as in the adjective show that verbs the noun is how I'm going to be saying things. And you have to sing me the title of the show in the style of by Menin.
Got it.
So each show will have that many syllables in it. So you'll be able to filter it down to
me,
there.
Me.
Okay. For example, The Stone Age cartoon that evolved the Honeymooners.
The Flintstones.
The Flintstones is correct. And that's how we play the Y stick that gives you the edge. Steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Oh, boy. Well, I have 4. Sarah has 4. Kim, I'm sorry to say you have 0.
Oh, dear. All right. Those steel meals could make the difference today. Let's throw it to Picky to see who will be going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, Sarah, Tara, Kim is our order today. We have 39 questions, high stakes, so no equalizer challenge zones today. Deal with it.
Good luck, everybody.
Good luck.
And of course, and no hints for this game. You know it or you don't. Are we ready to play the wide stick that gives you the edge?
Yes, David.
And 5 day points to Sarah for starting off the game in style. Here we go. The cromulent cartoon that embiggens the monorail.
The cromulent cartoon that embiggens the The Simpsons.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
The dystopian anthology that loves the sow.
That loves the sow?
Sow.
Black Mirror.
Kim. The legal drama that kills the will.
The Good Wife.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting. The cutting drama that drunks the June bug.
The cutting drama that drunks the June bug. Is that correct, what you just said? Oh, God, fuck. Shit. I can picture the final scene. Amy Adams. I don't know. Buzz me.
You're on the right track. That was Sharp Objects. Tara.
Yep.
The radioactive miniseries that exposes the bureaucracy.
The Hot Zone.
Shit. Chernobyl. Kim.
Yeah.
The NYC Friends sitcom that poops the shoe.
Could you repeat that, please?
The NYC Friends sitcom that poops the shoe.
Oh. 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 What show is that? Oh. Broad City.
Yay!
Sorry it took me so long to get there.
Back to Sarah. The family drama that acquires the network.
That's the one I was waiting for.
That acquires the... Okay, well, I hope it's this Succession.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
The dramedy that rides the invisible car.
Atlanta.
Back to Kim.
Yep.
The mockumentary that records the shrugs.
That records the shrugs? Oh, The Office.
Sarah D. Bunting. The shrink show that fills the week.
That fills the week?
That is correct. The shrink show that fills the week.
Show that fills the week. In treatment.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
The soap that raises the stakes.
Oh, no. Riverdale.
Steel meal. Dark Shadows.
Correct. Nice steel meal there. Kim.
Yeah.
The Netflix drama that moves the castle.
That moves the castle.
Correct.
Netflix.
The Netflix drama that moves the castle.
Queen's Gambit.
Nice.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. The cult drama that outs the truth.
That outs the truth?
Yep.
The L word.
I understand where you're going with that. That is the X-Files. The truth is
out. Oh, right.
Tara Arianos.
Yep.
The forking comedy that peeps the chili.
The Good Place.
And bring us into our first score break for Kim.
Yeah.
The political drama that walks the talk.
The West Wing.
That is correct. All right. High scoring game. Let's get the scores so far, please, Tara.
Very close game. I have 3. Sarah has 4. Kim has 5.
All right. Ooh, nicely
the spoiler
done.
Is spoiling.
We are changing the game now.
Oh, God.
Same concept. Okay. Your answers will be by Menon compatible, but yeah. They are characters from TV shows now.
Oh, okay.
And the hint will be provided in the same manner.
Okay.
Is it always first and last name, or you don't know?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No.
Okay. Some of them could be just...
but you don't know their last name. So it'll be the character as you know it.
Right. Okay.
Gotcha.
Sarah D. Bunting. The snared daughter that hates the kitty. The snared daughter that hates the kitty.
The snared daughter that hates the kitty?
Correct.
It's Benson.
That is from 24, Kim Bauer.
Oh, the kitty.
Tara Arianna.
Yep.
The devout neighbor that starts the bombardment.
Oh, God.
The devout neighbor that starts the bombardment.
I don't know.
Steel meal. Ned Flanders.
Ned Flanders, correct. Of Bible questions.
Bombardment, of course.
Kim.
Yeah.
The beef squash that rocks the keyboard. The beef squash that rocks the keyboard.
Oh, boy.
Don't know.
Gene Belcher from Bob's Burgers.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting. The Brit detective that chases the Alice. Full name here.
Can you read the clue again, please?
The Brit detective that chases the Alice.
The Alice?
Yes. Oh, as in works with Flo and Vera.
The Brit detective that chooses you. It doesn't scan properly, but I don't have anything else. So Sherlock Holmes.
I don't know his first name.
What is his last name?
Luther.
John Luther.
John Luther. Yeah, I knew it was him, but couldn't pull the first name.
Tara.
Yep.
The handsome student that leads the group. The handsome student that leads the group.
Nope.
Jeff Winger from Community Lead System.
Sure.
Kim.
Yeah. Yeah.
The toothy criminal that digs the coal.
All right, I know the show.
Toothy criminal that digs.
Now I have to come up with a character. Okay. Oh, God, I'm so bad with character names. And picturing him. We used to dig coal together. He wears those little glasses. Yeah, I'm not going to get it.
Steel meal.
Steel meal from Tara.
Boyd Crowder.
Yes.
Have it until Kim said that.
Sorry, I should have described less. I forgot about steel meal since I don't have any.
Now, this is a slightly off-axis clue, but considering the panel here, I felt safe doing it and anybody could get it.
Okay.
The spy daddy that protects the daughter.
Okay.
The spy daddy that protects the daughter.
Yep. my God. My mind is emptied of names, and now all I want to sing is Liberace, but that's not right. I mean, it is right in our hearts.
He did play him.
But yeah, he did. He did. I'm blanking. Tara, steal it.
Okay.
Jack is this a steel meal?
Christo.
Was that a steel meal?
Yeah, steel meal.
Jack Christo from Alias, correct.
All right, we are now all tied up.
Ooh, all right. There's still quite a bit of game left, so every point will count. Tara Ariano.
Yep.
The functional drunk that loses the dick. The functional drunk that loses the dick.
Don Draper.
Correct.
Okay. Nice.
Kim.
Yeah.
The chair bestrider that blows the trombone.
The chair bestrider.
The chair bestrider that blows the trombone.
The trombone? I don't know.
Anybody know that one? From Star Trek Next Generation, that's Will Riker.
Well, he's a trombone. I was thinking, like, Price is Right, Bob Barker?
All right, here's a dark one for Sarah.
Go.
The apartment carpenter that avoids the stat rape charge.
What is his first name, though? Thoughts and prayers. Pat Schneider. Nope. Okay.
Nope. Anybody? Jake Hansen.
Oh!
Melrose Place.
Oh! He does.
Right.
He does.
I was with you, Sarah. I thought Schneider, for sure.
Tara.
Yep.
The paleontologist that takes the break.
Ross Geller.
Kim.
Yeah.
The comedy writer that works the night cheese.
Liz Lemon.
Sarah. The heated cop that tolerates the novelist.
Tolerates the novelist?
Yes, heated is in quotations. The heated cop that tolerates the novelist.
I don't know her name. I know the show. I could describe her to a sketch artist. Yeah, I don't know.
Anybody?
Does anyone know that broad's name?
All right, the question's off the table. What's the show?
I thought it was
Castle.
A
dude.
It's Castle.
It is Castle,
right?
Yeah, the name you're looking for is Kate Beckett.
Sure. Ah.
I
not
the
in a million
reversed.
Years.
Inspiration for the Nikki Heat books, hence Heated.
Oh.
Tara.
Gotcha.
Of course.
The roommate that can't find the lanai.
Rose Nyland.
Correct. Golden Girls. Bring us into our second score break for Kim.
Yeah.
The prophetic vamp that slayed a slayer. The prophetic vamp that slayed a slayer.
Drusilla.
Correct.
Wow.
Nice pull.
All right. Everybody has three questions left, so let's hear the scores.
Still very close. Sarah has 5, Kim has 7, I have 8.
All right, let's get right back into it with Sarah D. Bunting's last question. The shop girl that rides the blue box.
Read it again, please.
The shop girl that rides the blue box.
The blue bogs?
Box.
Box.
B-O-X.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thought that would actually help. And yet.
Brings up an interesting question, though. What is a blue bog?
Something to do with Picts.
Something very, very Scottish is what I can tell.
Yes, I'll say. I mean, this is wrong, but since I don't know the answer, here's a little something for everyone. Oodlander!
Sorry.
You're welcome.
Incorrect. That is from Doctor Who, Rose Tyler.
Oh.
Fucking Doctor Who.
Whoops, there's another wrong answer for you for some reason. Tara.
Yeah.
The rumpled crime solver that pesters the perps.
Columbo.
Correct. Kim.
Yeah.
The agent that loves the pie.
Dale Cooper.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. The chess prodigy that enjoys the pills.
Don't know.
That's Beth Harmon from Queen's Gambit.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
The monarch that eats up the whistle down.
Queen Charlotte? Queen Charlotte.
Put the buzz here because you did. Correct. From Bridgerton. Kim. Mm-hmm. The city manager that can't stop the pooping.
Okay. What's his name?
The city manager that can't stop the pooping.
Ann Perkins, and her boyfriend is... I don't want to say too much because, you know, steel mails and all.
Anybody?
I don't remember either. Ben and...
Chris Traeger.
Traeger!
Stop. Pooping. Probably Rob Lowe's greatest moment as an actor.
100%.
I'm not even, like, being silly.
No, it's true.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Everybody's last question coming at you. Sarah D. Bunting. The architect that steals the French horn. The architect that steals the French horn.
Only architect I can pull right now. So here we go. Mike Brady.
It works.
Correct. That is anybody?
Ted Mosby.
Ted Mosby, correct, from How I Met Your Mother. Mm. Tara, your last question.
Yep.
The marshal that marries the sister-in-law. The marshal that marries the sister-in-law.
Nope.
Anybody?
It's from Deadwood.
Seth Bullock.
Oh, sure. The other marshal.
Kim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I actually, it's my question, so I won't know it. Go ahead.
The chief of medicine that bullies the lawyer.
The chief of medicine that bullies the lawyer?
That is correct.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anybody?
It's Kelso, but I can't remember his first name.
Bob Kelso. Correct. Wouldn't All right, that is regulation. Let's hear the score, Sarah.
So close. Sarah finished with 5. Kim had 8. I had 10.
All Woo! Right. Tara takes it. We
Congratulations.
Have...
It's over.
Let's do this tiebreaker for a future steel meal. First person to shout out the answer. First person to sing out the answer wins. Here we go. The lab subject that loves the Eggos. The lab subject that loves the Eggos.
11.
Correct. From Stranger Things, that is 11. Tara, you take the day.
Tara! Tara!
And the season!
Around, nothing's ever gonna keep you down. You're the best around. Something, something, never learn the words after that.
They're all the same.
Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Woo! Great season.
Oh,
it's a close one.
Well done, Tara.
Thank you.
Whew. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. My singing has really disturbed Anne Murray, my dog. We got plate and real for MTV's Real World Reunion season. Then Tara told us why she is not a crackpot for thinking Paramount Plus's launch is a failure of discovery and usability. Before going around the dial with stops at Good Girls, Married at First Sight, WandaVision, Cop Rock, and 911 Lone Star. Lauren had us cherry pick our friends from TV Land for extra credit topic, while Sean's no-nut case for ER's father and son flatlined on the operating table, which was in the middle of the desert or something like that. We crowned winners and the losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from David and at EHG Assist. Thanks again, guys. Next up, all Adams. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4. Adams.
Oh no.
On Extra Extra Hot Crate, there's like 5 people that really enjoyed that joke. And on the next EHG Prime, it's Waffles Plus Mochi. remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I brought a whole bar.
Sarah D. Bunting,
True Stories,
and Kim Reed.
Could somebody get the phone?
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grape.
What a place to die.
Well done.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.